Dorothea there with Theodore. Dorothea, top of the right circle, reels it in, hands it off. Carlson shoots off the post and home! William Carlson, long post and in for a power play goal!
Live from the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com.
Shoots, kick save, Fleury. Rebound loose, a shot, and no! It goes through Fleury for a goal!
This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, your home for access with the team, exclusive player interviews, and breaking news from around the National Hockey League. Here are your hosts, Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman, live inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studios. Findlay Chevrolet on the 215, home of the... What happened there?
What do you mean?
Oh. Just seemed like a long time.
Yeah, I had to turn my mic on.
Okay. Why are you sitting there saying, what do you mean?
Well, because I explained to you that it's really, unfortunately, quite hot in the studio. So I was in the process of adjusting the fan.
Okay.
And so I had to, like, scurry or hurry to... Drama in the LBC, as our friend across the hall likes to say. You know, it's never a dull moment. Never a dull moment.
Okay, so I don't think anyone is, you know, under any illusions that I'm in studio, right? Like, we all know that I do the show from home when it's convenient, when it makes sense. Chapman is in the studio by himself. You're telling me it's pretty hot in there.
Yeah, I was complaining yesterday about how warm it was. So I went to someone who is above me in the pay grade and in title as well. Jared Justice sits in here from time to time, and I explained to him, I'm like, Jared, you know, it's quite hot in studio.
Yep.
We have outsourced our like engineering and stuff like that. So I don't really know who to email to complain to about the fact that it's like an oven in the studio. Like,
how hot is it in the studio right now?
Well, I don't have a thermometer, and
if you were to guess,
I would venture to guess probably like 82, 83 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah. Now
that's warm.
I generally keep my apartment at like 75. I'll lower it when I go to sleep. I'm the guy who has to be cold when I sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I cannot sleep. Like, this is why I generally don't do camping, because I have no climate control when I'm in a tent. But I generally need it to be cold, and I need to be, it sounds funny, but wrapped in blankets when I sleep. That's how I am comfortable. And like, if I go to a hotel, when I'm with Mrs. Chapman, I have to negotiate, and I have to, you know, play nice, and we have to come to an agreement, you know, in terms of what we're going to set the thermostat at. But like, when I went to New York in January, first of all, it was like 25 degrees the day that I got there. I had the thermostat in the hotel room at like 68.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah.
That's the right way to go.
I don't care if it was 25 degrees out. That thermostat is going low, and I'm wrapped around every square inch of blanket in that king-size bed. It's like a bird's nest, because I have the four pillows thrown all over the place. That's how I roll. Now, at home, I have to be very nice with my wife, because she is a very tiny woman, and she gets cold very easily. And so we have to come to an agreement on the temperature. So generally we'll keep it between 75 and 78, and we'll lower it a little bit at night, maybe like 73. But yeah, my mom is even worse than me. Like, I go into her apartment or her condo, I mean, and like, it's like 60 degrees in the middle of December. I'm like, Mom, don't you have the heat on? No, don't need it.
Yeah, the beautiful thing about going on vacation isn't necessarily the destination that you're going to. It's that you can set the thermostat as low as humanly possible in the room and not have to worry about having to pay for that bill.
Right.
So I'm with you there. So that's why you missed the woo. You missed the woo
because I'm adjusting because you the were, fan.
You were adjusting the fan that I'm sure people can hear that's on in the background. And then when I asked you what happened, you tried to play it off as if nothing happened.
Well, yeah, nothing really happened, okay. But yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad that we're off to a great start, as always, here on the VGK Insider Show. We're going to dig into some storylines leading into the Stanley Cup Final, because I don't know if you know this, Chapman, but we're about 49 hours away from Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. I know it seems like last year that the conference final concluded and the Dallas Stars were eliminated by the Edmonton Oilers and the New York Rangers, remember that team, they were eliminated by the Florida Panthers, and it's only taken us about 18 years to get to Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final, but that is on Saturday, so I felt like it's probably time we dig a little bit deeper into the actual matchup, some of the storylines that are going to be at play in the next 3 weeks or so in the National Hockey League. We're also going to dig into and create a power ranking of sorts for the six potential names for the Utah Hockey Club. Yeah, we're going to do it because there's one good name and everything else sucks. Truthfully, honestly, it's going to be a train wreck for Utah if they don't get this right. And I think there's a couple that you can get away with. One makes absolutely no sense. And one is just, why are you even going down this road? We'll get to that just a little bit later on in the show. We're also going to dig into a replica championship belt for this year's Stanley Cup winner and whether or not that would be something you'd want to wear or want to own. If you're a hockey fan only, if you're a wrestling fan only, that's going to come at you an hour number two. And we've also got some sweater updates in one-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. So let's start off and get back on the rails as best we can here, Chapman, with some storylines entering the Stanley Cup Final. And the first one's going to be the obvious one, right? Like, the first one is centered around the legacies of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And I know we spent a lot of time yesterday on Connor McDavid. We did the is Connor McDavid overrated thing. Obviously, that hot take was generated so that you can get those talking points in. But the fact of the matter is, and I believe this to be true, Connor McDavid does not need a championship to cement his status among the very best to ever play the game. However, it wouldn't hurt. Right? Like when you are as good as McDavid is, when you are a player that conceivably can get to 2,000 career points, if there's no catastrophic injury, if McDavid is as productive over the next 6-7 years as he's been over the last 9 years, I see no reason to believe that he can't get there. When you're talking about eclipsing that type of those types of numbers offensively, you are one of, if not the very best to ever play the game. But as you pointed out yesterday, most of the best have a cup. Most of the best that have ever played this game have won it all. And for McDavid, that's the only thing that he's missing, right? He's won scoring titles. He's won Rocket Richard. He's won a Rocket Richard. Like, he has won every single individual award that you can win. A Stanley Cup would put him over the edge and cement that legacy in much the same way it would for Leon Draisaitl. Like, when you look at Draisaitl, right, like oftentimes, and we've seen this before, right, with Mario Lemieux and Jaromir Jagr. We've seen it before with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, right? Like, there has been a guy that has run shotgun to the elite generational star and is really in a tier above everybody else, but not quite in that generational field. And that's what Leon Draisaitl is. He has stretches where he is the best player in the world. And he's done everything you can do but one thing, and that's win a championship. So when you look at these two players and you look at the next 3 weeks, there's no guarantee you're getting back. Like, I know the Florida Panthers, they're in their second consecutive Stanley Cup final, but there is no guarantee, especially in the Pacific Division, especially in the Western Conference, that you are going to be able to get back to this point with this Edmonton Oilers team. They absolutely, absolutely need to maximize this chance, and they can seize that and solidify their legacies just 9 and 10 years into their careers.
Let me ask you a kind of a maybe weird question, but go in the opposite direction. Hypothetically, McDavid wins 2 or 3 Stanley Cups. Does he then have a case to be the greatest ever?
I don't know why you wouldn't make that argument.
I mean, like, when
this
you watch
is
this
completely
guy,
different.
Yeah,
like,
and when you watch him play,
he's on a different level.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like the way he and we talk about his speed, but the way he sees the ice, and he seems to be like 3 or 4 moves ahead of every single player on the ice at all times. Like I think I'm with you there in that you could push and make an argument that he's got the potential to be the greatest player ever, which is really saying something when you think about Gretzky and Lemieux and some of the other all-time greats who've played this game. But kind of crazy to think that him and Gretzky both would have played for the same club.
So, you know, we often do the Mount Rushmore thing. I think one Stanley Cup puts Connor McDavid on the Mount Rushmore. And maybe I'm projecting a little bit too much because he's still got a lot of career left. But the fact of the matter is, I don't see him slowing down. Hopefully he doesn't slow down, because you get to watch history on a night-in, night-out basis. It's awesome. But if you're starting to talk about 2, 3, 4 Stanley Cup championships, if you're getting into that realm with Connor McDavid, I don't know how he's not first, and then it's everybody else.
Well, and then you also factor
the fact that he's doing it, and the fact that he's doing it now in this era against this level of goaltending, this level of players, it's very different than what Wayne Gretzky was doing. It's pretty different than what, you know, Mario Lemieux was doing. And I think at this point right now, you give him a championship, he's going to eclipse what Sidney Crosby was able to do.
Yeah, and I think you also factor in that he would have to probably win 3 in 7 or 8 years in order to, which is impressive in and of its own, right? Like, that's pretty on par with Sid and what he did in Pittsburgh. But yeah. I know there's other storylines that we want to get into, but yeah, I'm with you. Like, these two guys, Draisaitl and Connor, like, I think you can make the case that they're the number one and number two best player in the game right now. Like, Leon is also, like, when he takes over games, like, I think it's almost like a Jordan and a Pippen, where there are people out there, and I don't agree with them, but there are people out there who say Scottie Pippen was the second best player in the NBA when Michael Jordan was winning championships. So, you know, it's a case where it's similar to that, where I wonder how far Draisaitl could take this team without Connor, and I'd say that they're still a pretty good team. I don't know if they're as good, but, I mean, Draisaitl's a really good player, but their legacies, I think, this is an opportunity for them to put that one mark next to their names as being Stanley Cup champs, and I think for those two guys, I think it would complete their legacy, because there's really nothing else for them to accomplish if they're able to win this title.
I'm glad you said that, because I'm going to give you one thing to think about beyond just this championship series. We know that Leon Draisaitl is entering into the final year of his deal next season. If he's not ready to go with a contract extension, if Leon Draisaitl wants to go be the guy somewhere else, here's where it gets interesting, because this can be a legacy definer for the two of them together as teammates. But if the other was able to win a cup away from the other, right? Like, if Leon could win a cup without Connor, or Connor could win a cup without Leon, that takes their legacy to a whole different level. So as much as winning a cup would cement their legacy, there's still something Leon could do or Connor could do that would have the world look at them maybe a little bit differently than they do if they are able to win this one together. Okay, so let's slide from the legacy surrounding two of the cornerstone pieces of the Edmonton Oilers, and we're going to dig into two of the cornerstone pieces of the Florida Panthers. And that's the legacy of Sergei Bobrovsky and Paul Maurice. And it seems unlikely to really clue in on a coach here, but you know, the fact of the matter is Paul Maurice has coached forever. You think I'm kidding? You think I'm being funny? I'm not. I'm not doing the Paul Maurice funny soundbite thing. He coached the freaking Whalers. Seriously.
Yeah.
Paul Maurice has been coaching in the National Hockey League so long that his first job as a head coach was coaching the Hartford Whalers.
Yeah.
We're talking 1,849 games in the regular season for Paul Maurice. That is a lot of hockey coached. That is a long time committed to this game without having your name on a Stanley Cup. And the fact of the matter is, he's been incredibly consistent. He's gotten there a couple of times and has been unable to push through. If you get your name on the cup, not only are you one of the consistent guys, not only are you one of the guys that was able to have longevity in a career path that doesn't usually tend to favor longevity when you haven't won it all, and then he cements his legacy as one of the best coaches to ever coach in this game.
Well, especially when you consider that the shelf life of the average NHL coach is like 2.5 years. The fact that he, as you mentioned, basically started, he started coaching in mid-90s? Like that's how far you got to, almost 30 years in the game as a coach at this level. Look, it's been an impressive career for Paul Maurice. I think you kind of feel for him a little bit because he was the coach of the Carolina Hurricanes and he ended up getting fired and they hire Peter Laviolette. They go on to win the Stanley Cup, I think, the following season. And then Laviolette leaves and they bring Paul Maurice back. So it was a sandwich, and unfortunately for Maurice, he was the bread and not the meat in that type of equation. But the guy's, he's been close, and most people here will remember he was the coach of the Winnipeg Jets the first year that the Golden Knights played them in the Western Conference Final. He was great soundbite then. He's still a great soundbite. I've got one actually that we're going to play as one of the rejoins today. I think a pretty good Maurice soundbite. So stay tuned for that. But I almost wonder if we haven't had the discussion about whether or not Paul Maurice is a Hall of Fame coach. And I think if he wins a Stanley Cup, that can only help his argument as far as getting into the Hockey Hall of Fame. I mean, I haven't looked at his numbers like in depth to where I'd say he is or he isn't, but I think if you win a Stanley Cup as a coach and a guy who's coached as long as him, I think that pushes the needle in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, like it's hard not to, right? Like you're talking about almost 2,000 games coached, which I'm sure he'll get to in his career. He's got 869 wins in the regular season. He's got 66 wins in the playoffs. Like this is a guy that has just kind of done everything that there is to do. So with the cup, I think it's a slam dunk. He's absolutely a Hall of Fame coach. But I do think to make sure that that's part of your legacy, you got to do the thing. And in much the same way we're talking about Paul Maurice, it's the same for Sergei Bobrovsky. Now, let me just kind of get right out here and say it. I believe Sergei Bobrovsky is a Hall of Fame goaltender. Like when you look at Henrik Lundqvist, when you look at Roberto Luongo, you can put Sergei Bobrovsky in that category. However, Bobrovsky's got an opportunity to do something those two guys were unable to do, and that's actually win a Stanley Cup. And here's the thing with Bob. Right, like we know how good he was in Columbus. We know about how he's gotten to this point, but then he secures the bag in Florida, and he wasn't good. First couple of years of that contract were not good for Sergei Bobrovsky. It was not good for the Florida Panthers. There were even conversations, rumblings, if you will, of a potential buyout. Like when you get your franchise goaltender in 2-3 years into the contract, you're thinking about buying him out. That's an indicator that it wasn't working, and then it did. And it coincides with Paul Maurice, and I'm not terribly surprised that that happened because once you start to shore things up defensively, it allows Sergei Bobrovsky to really shine. But the fact of the matter is, Bob, for the last 18 months, has been among the very best in terms of goaltending in the National Hockey League. He's not on Vasilevsky's level. He's not on Shesterkin's level, even though he's beaten those two guys in this postseason run combined. However, a championship puts him into that next level, that next category. It solidifies his legacy, and it's a big moment for Sergei Bobrovsky. You don't want to be the goaltender that gets there constantly but can't get it done when it truly matters. He's got a second crack at it, and I'm really interested to see what he does with it.
Yeah, and real quick, Paul Maurice, fourth all-time in wins, only behind Barry Trotz, Joel Quenneville, and Scotty Bowman. So I think there's a lot of people who'd say, yeah, he's probably a Hall of Fame coach with or without the Stanley Cup. But anyway, on to Bobrovsky. Mm. Yeah, I think for him, you've got to remember, he wasn't even, like, he was splitting the net with Alex Lyon last year at the start of the playoffs for the Florida Panthers. And things were looking bleak for them when they were, you know, when they were down 3-1 to the Boston Bruins. And you're like, oh, here we go. You know, they win the President's Trophy last year, or a couple years ago. They go out to the Tampa Bay Lightning. This year, they barely squeak into the playoffs. They end up losing. What is going on there? Like, I mean, everything changed with that win over the Boston Bruins. They all of a sudden now became maybe the best team in the NHL once they found the way to win that series. But Bobrovsky was a huge part of that. And he was maybe the biggest part of them making that run to the Stanley Cup final. Now, that long break maybe didn't help them in between Eastern Conference final and the first game of the Stanley Cup, but I don't think it would have mattered because I think Vegas was just that much better than them. But for Bobrovsky, he's like McDavid and Draisaitl. He's got the hardware, the individual accolades. He's got a huge contract. He's certainly going to live very well the rest of his life, whether or not the Panthers win this Stanley Cup or not. But for him, it's a career-defining moment. And you don't know how many opportunities you're ever going to have to win a Stanley Cup. It's why you play the game. It's why you start as a kid getting to the rink at 5 a.m. in the morning or whatever time you were able to find ice time. This is what it's all about. And for Bob, he's played on some decent teams, but never any that I think were in this position to where they're probably the team that most people are going to pick to win this series and win the Stanley Cup. But it's a career-defining moment for him. He got there last year. He got a taste of it. And I think, you know, for him now, this could be his last chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there you have it. Legacies kind of at stake on both sides. McDavid, Draisaitl. It feels like if they don't get it done, there's still time, in much like what you were just talking about with Sergei Bobrovsky and even to a degree Paul Maurice. Like, it feels like this is the moment. This is the opportunity. This is the one you want to hit and seize and find, because you don't know how many more cracks at it you're going to get. Now, this is one that's going to absolutely piss off the state of Minnesota, and I don't really care. It doesn't bother me. I'm fine with that. But is Florida the new state of hockey? And you know what? Not to like leave out Nevada here. And listen, I get it. Like, the Golden Knights have been to two Stanley Cup finals over the last 7 years. But when you open it up 7 years back, really since the Golden Knights came into the league, okay? Since the Golden Knights came into the league, Nevada or Florida have been featured in six of the last seven Stanley Cup finals. Let that sink in for a moment. Like, non-traditional hockey markets are absolutely hitting it out of the park right now. Now, the state of Florida has been represented in the Stanley Cup final 5 years in a row. Tampa Bay went 3 years in a row. Florida, consecutive Stanley Cup final appearances. This is the new state of hockey in terms of drawing players into their destination, utilizing the advantages of being Florida or Tampa to your disposal, and being willing and committed to winning. That's the thing. A lot of people are sitting here, and I hate this argument when it comes to there should be a tax or other teams should get more cap space because you can't compete with a team that's in a no state, in a no tax state. But the fact of the matter is, there are some teams that don't want to spend. There are some teams that are not committed to winning. The Golden Knights, not one of those teams. Yes, they are in a no-tax state, but the other side of the equation that is often ignored in those moments is that the Golden Knights will do anything to win. They will spend any amount of money to win. They will do everything that they can in order to win, and that's their inherent advantage. Not the fact that it's no state income tax. It's that they are willing to put together and change and evolve and grow and do what it takes to win. The same can be said for Tampa, and now the same can be said for Florida, and that's why you are seeing this excellence grow and build in the state of Florida as they've become the mecca at the professional level of hockey in the United States.
Well, let's also look at this from the perspective of some of the players who've come out of the Sunshine State. The Hughes brothers are all from Orlando. Brandon Duhaime, a pretty solid NHL player, also from the state of Florida. Shane the Ghost, Gossespierre, he's from the state of Florida. The Magna brothers, Jake Chychrun, born in Florida. This is now the hockey capital of the United States. They had four players on the World Junior Championships in 2023 from the state of Florida. So this state has now, and look, I'm not expecting the Florida Gators to compete with North Dakota or Minnesota or Michigan at the NCAA level, but there is a lot of young talent coming out of that state. And let's be honest, it's much like the state of Nevada. It's hot in the summer. So what do you want to do? You want to find something indoors where you can stay cool and be active. And I think a lot of parents are just like here and just like where you grew up in Southern California, where you're just looking for ways to stay cool in the summer. Transitioning from sports like basketball to hockey because you can get out on the ice, you're nice and comfortable, and it's a way to beat the heat, and it's a fun game to play. Like it's really fun, and I think that has helped Florida. I don't think there's anybody from the Panthers who was born in the state of Florida, but I always think back a long, long time ago when the Florida Panthers, their very first draft pick was John Van Briesbrook. And I always think of that being a big moment because them and the Lightning came in. I can't remember who came first. I think the Lightning were first and then the Panthers were second. But they came in like within a year or two of each other. And while one team has won three Stanley Cups, the other's been to three finals, and this being their third, they have an opportunity to join their rival across the state as being a Stanley Cup champ. So, yeah, for the state of Florida, it's now becoming a really big sport down there, and good for them. You know, it's a state that produces a ton of athletes. You look across the NFL and you look across Major League Baseball, there's a ton of players from Florida. Why not add the NHL to that list?
Okay. So from the brilliance and supremacy of the state of Florida, in terms of hockey success over the last 5-6 years, we are going to turn our attention to Canada. And if it blows my mind, Chapman. It really does. And it's still a sore subject for me because it was 93, and we all know what happened in 93, and I'm still not over it all these years later. But this is the opportunity for the country of Canada to win a Stanley Cup for the first time in 31 years. I don't understand how like it's been that mediocre for that long for all of the teams in Canada, but it has. And I know for a fact the Edmonton Oilers are not Canada's team, but they are Canada's only hope to break this 31-year drought. We'll see what happens. Like, I'm not super interested in this storyline. I really only wanted to throw the Princess Leia joke out there that the Oilers are Canada's only hope. And we'll see if it ends up being something that works out for Canadians that, truthfully, probably are rooting for the Florida Panthers because, like, Toronto doesn't want Edmonton to be the team that breaks the drought. Calgary sure as heck doesn't want Edmonton to be the team that breaks the drought. Vancouver probably thinks they should be in this spot, so they don't want the Oilers to break the drought. So, you know, you can keep telling yourself that they're Canada's team. They're not really Canada's team. We all know that they're not really Canada's team, but they do have an opportunity to break the goose egg for all Canadian teams that they've been able to put up consistently over the last 31 years. I know we're up against it, but I do want to get to this one really quickly, and I'm going to let you kind of riff on it, Chapman. You brought to the table Chris Knobloch and the impact that he has had in bringing the Oilers from 30th in the league to within 4 wins of the Stanley Cup final. To me, he's got them playing playoff hockey. He's got them committed. He's not in a panic every single time something doesn't go right to put McDavid and Draisaitl together on the same line. He understands how to get the most out of this team, and Chris Knobloch was the key to unlocking the potential of the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, and listen, when he took over, I don't think anyone was surprised that Jay Woodcroft was fired, right? Like, I mean, they were terrible, mm-hmm. and I think you bottle that with the disappointment of basically getting your bell rung by the Golden Knights last year in that second round series, and the opportunity for Jay Woodcroft was not going to be a long one with the Oilers struggling out of the gate, but they bring in and I'll say a relative unknown in Chris Knobloch. Obviously, people in hockey circles knew who he was, but I would say the overall general public probably did not know who he was, and he resurrected them. You know, I know we're going to get into wrestling a little bit later in the show, and I keep mm-hmm. thinking of him being Paul Bearer, and he has the urn and he carries it to the Rogers, I don't know, what is it, Rogers Place, Rogers Center, whatever it's called up there, the ice district, and he walks into that rink with the urn mm-hmm. and all of a sudden the Edmonton Oilers, they're laying on the mat and they just pop up and you're like, up, they're back. And full credit.
Oilers are Undertaker.
Yes.
The Oilers are the Undertaker.
Dead
That's
man,
what you're telling me.
They were okay. Dead men walking or skating, I guess would be yeah. the pun. But the guy deserves, and I don't know if he's going to win the Jack Adams Award. I certainly think he certainly belongs in the discussion for Jack Adams Award because the job he did was phenomenal. And this is a guy, it's his first go-round. And
Buddy. Chapman, Rick Tocchet already won the Jack.
Oh, that's
Adams.
Right. Yeah, I forgot that they announced the awards before the awards show. Like, what are we doing? Why are we even doing? Why even have a show if we already know who won? You imagine that the Grammys? You find out 3 weeks before the Grammys that Lady Gaga won Album of the Year. Why am I showing up to the award show?
But oh boy,
I forgot about that. Boy. You're right. He did. Rick Tocchet. Sorry, Rick. Yep. I know yep. he lives here in town yep. too. So. I hope he's not listening.
Yeah,
to me.
No, he's not going to be happy with you.
Yeah, he's gonna call Millard and be like, "Hey, Mallard, that Chapman guy, doesn't he pay attention to the awards?" But yeah, Knobloch mm-hmm. did a great job, and I think the storyline with him is this was a guy who a year ago wasn't on anyone's radar, I think, to be an NHL head coach, and now, like you said, he's 4 wins away from winning the ultimate prize in the game. So there's a story within a story. You've got a guy on one end in Paul Maurice. Mm-hmm. Has been in the league since the Hartford Whalers were a thing, and a guy who was in yep. the league since Connor Bedard came into the league. So,
well, here's the thing. It's
he came into the league after Connor Bedard.
Right. It's 1,849 regular season games for Paul Maurice. It's 69 games for Chris Knobloch, and that really is the coaching matchup in the Stanley Cup final. We're going to take a break and come back with a little Utah Hockey Club conversation. It's coming up next on the VGK Insider Show. Rolling along here on a Thursday, Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman, the VGK Insider Show. Paul Maurice, always a great soundbite. Though, Chapman, I'll tell you, on the production side of things, I wasn't actually able to hear the
yeah,
soundbite.
I don't know what happened there. That's really strange. I think the mic that Maurice was talking into.
Were you adjusting a fan?
No. I tried to adjust okay. the volume, and clearly the mixing did not mesh.
Okay. Well, we're not going to belabor the point, but I'm sure whatever Paul Maurice said was really funny and awesome. And boy, oh boy, we cannot wait, obviously, for games to actually start again. It has been a long week, but we are on the cusp of the Stanley Cup final starting. That'll be Saturday in Florida, Edmonton, the Panthers. We're going to give official predictions tomorrow. I still need some time to really hammer out my thoughts on who I think is going to win this series and why. But official predictions, that's coming at you tomorrow. We're also going to have Darren Elliott on the program tomorrow, so that's something to keep in mind. He'll be joining us at 4 o'clock to discuss the Stanley Cup Final and some other things as well, including some cool lacrosse camps that you might be able to get into if you're so inclined. But right now we're going to talk Utah hockey. And the reason we're going to do this power ranking style is because earlier today, the six potential names, it seems like everything's been narrowed down to six potential candidates for their nickname, the Utah Hockey Club's nickname. And so here they are, the six, in no particular order. You've got the Utah Blizzard, the Utah Mammoth, the Utah Outlaws, the Utah Venom, the Utah Yeti, or the Utah Hockey Club. No, seriously, that is a name that is in contention for a National Hockey League team, the Utah Hockey Club. So, Chris Chapman, I want you to give me your power ranking 1 through 6. So the best through the worst, you tell me what you like and why.
Well, the first choice is obvious for me. It's Yeti. Like, mm-hmm. To me, it's original, it's unique, it doesn't sound like some crappy minor league franchise that existed for 2.5 seasons. Why half season? Because they folded before they could complete their third season. Like, Yeti to me is cool, it's a bit mysterious, the Abominable Snowman was a Yeti, there's a lot of really cool things you could do with the logo, with the mascot, so Yeti for me is number one. I like Mammoth for number two, because I feel like, yeah, you could always go with the woolly mammoth, but you could lean into mammoth as in mountains as well. So I think that's kind of a unique name, and I like that it doesn't end in an S. I mean, there's a couple of them that don't end in an S, but mammoth to me is number two. After that, I think they all suck. I'll be honest. I mean, there's one that's infinitely worse than the others.
Just rank them for me. You don't have to give me any opinions. Rank them for me.
To me, I think Blizzard is probably third. Mm-hmm. Like but it's so similar to Avalanche. It's like
That's why it's third, Chapman. That's why it's third, because it's a terrible name. But if it pisses off the Colorado Avalanche, all the better.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think Venom is really bad. Like, that's probably fourth for me. Outlaws is terrible. Like, any team that calls themselves Outlaws, don't even bother putting on in the uniform, because that nickname is so bad and it's so overdone. Like, that was the name of the XFL team that was here, like, in 1999. The Las Vegas Outlaws. Like, it's not even original. Yeah.
Right.
And then Utah Hockey Club, it's so bad it has to be a joke.
Okay, well, hold on. You're a soccer guy.
Right. But this isn't soccer.
You don't have any problem with, like, you know, the hockey club being a part of the name for soccer teams.
Well, I think
why is this different?
Well, because there's what's different about this and soccer, and I'll get into it. But generally in Europe, I'll use Barcelona or Real Madrid as an example. Barcelona is not just a soccer team. They have a basketball team. They have a women's soccer team. They have other sports, handball, other squash, other sports within the umbrella of Barcelona. Therefore, it's a club. It's kind of like the Boys and Girls Club, right? Where you go there and you are part of a club. You can participate in multiple sports. Obviously, you gravitate towards one the further you go. But it's not like Utah Hockey Club. It's not like they're going to have a women's lacrosse team or a men's track and field team or a cricket team to go with the Utah Hockey Club. The other thing is, generally, these clubs in Europe, they're owned by the people. Mm-hmm. This is owned by one guy. So it's not really a club. Like, you're not really a club. You're an exclusive entity owned by one guy. But like I said, I think that's so bad it has to be a joke. because there's no possible way that that's going to be the team that it's going to be for at least 1 year, right? Is that my understanding of this?
That's, I mean, I think they'll have their nickname for this season, but but my understanding, having watched a 30-minute video today on the ins and outs of what every team's going to be wearing next year on the ice in terms of their sweaters, I think it's just going to be Utah emblazoned across the chest of the Utah Hockey Club. Okay, so my power rankings are essentially exactly like yours. I've got the Yeti number one, Mammoth number two, Blizzard number three, and again, that's only because if it steps on the toes of the Avalanche, that's funny to me. Then you've got Venom at four, Outlaws at five, and then you've got Hockey Club. Like, listen, you can't treat this, given that it's the Arizona Coyotes, you cannot treat this as if it's a minor league thing, right? Like, the Arizona Coyotes just had to move because they were playing at Arizona State University, right? You cannot treat this, picking a nickname, like a minor league endeavor. And to me, the Utah Hockey Club sounds minor league. Even if you can talk yourself into, well, some of the greatest soccer clubs of all time have football club in their name, I don't care. It's not the same sport, and we're not doing that because this just feels amateurish to a degree. With that being said, I think Yeti's the clear winner here. Like, you have a built-in mascot. You've got built-in logos. You can be as playful or as fierce as you want to be. You can also tie in other aspects because a Yeti is involved in a colder type of climate. If you want to throw a mammoth in there, you can do it. And you can have secondary logos that kind of play off of two different potential nicknames that allow you. Or you just have a mammoth as your cuter, you know, mascot, and you've got the Yeti as the more terrifying one. It really doesn't matter. The point is, there are two names I think that if you go with, it'll be fine. Everything else, I think, is an absolute disaster. Blizzard's going to be a disaster. Venom's going to be a disaster. Outlaws, like you said, it's played out. And Hockey Club, you cannot treat this like it's not the big leagues. And that's my biggest issue with the Utah Hockey Club. Take a break. Set up hour number two next on the VGK Insider Show. I love it when you can play the Aquabats as part of a rejoin, and you've done it 2 days in a row. So I commend you, Chris Chapman. Well done there.
I think there'll be a bit more. There'll be a bit more.
Why did you go with the Marchessault goal? What?
Well, it was the first goal of the Stanley Cup Final for the Golden Knights. So I wanted to.
Sure. Yeah.
You know.
I just wanted to. You know, we still got like 48 hours to go here before a game actually starts.
Yeah, well, make people remember what it's like to have Stanley Cup Final hockey.
Do you think they've already forgotten?
Maybe. They might have forgotten.
It's been a long week. Yeah.
What sport do we talk about again? I don't even remember. Who's the champ?
Well, the Vegas Golden Knights are still the champs.
Yes.
That hasn't changed.
Right, for a couple more weeks.
And unfortunately, the Golden Knights don't have a championship belt to go with that. Oh. But the winner of Edmonton, Florida, will. We'll dive into that in hour number two. We're also going to book some matches involving the players from each of the two teams, WWE style. That's coming up next on the VGK Insider Show.